If this reading of Grateful Shows has given you something to sit with, I'd be glad to have you along for the rest of the ride. You can listen on whatever platform suits you best. The link is in the show notes. And if you'd like to go deeper, the written work behind these readings will be available as a complete tour book upon finishing the tour. Again, the link is below. A short note on Podchaser would mean a great deal at this early stage of the show's life. And if you'd like to receive occasional communication about the writing and what's coming next, the newsletter sign-up is in the show notes too. Thank you so much for listening. Welcome to the Grateful Shows podcast. Long-form reviews exploring the world of Grateful Dead live shows through history, philosophy, fiction, and poetic meditations. I'm your guide, host, and author, J.Y. Pod, inviting you to join me as we take a step back. This edition of the Grateful Shows podcast takes us back to the March 1986 Spring Tour, Season 2, better known as Tour Book 2, here at Grateful Shows. In this special edition, we are going to take a breather and do a quick wrap-up of what happened over the last six shows in 1986. Shall we go? First of all, thank you all for taking the time to listen to Grateful Shows wherever you are in the world. It's my privilege to share this time with you. And now that the tour is over, it's time for a quick recap. I won't get into what's best or worst. Leave that to pundits smarter than I am to judge. I will provide some background on the tour to bring certain elements into focus. First, some tour stats. If you suddenly materialized at the Hampton Coliseum, drove to the Spectrum in Philadelphia, and then abruptly vanished after the show, leaving no trace of your vehicle or yourself, you would have traveled about 278 miles, logging roughly 5.5 to 6 hours on the road. Gas was cheap then, averaging 63 cents a gallon. Costing less than $15 to fill up and get there. The benefit of having six shows compressed into two venues is clear. There are plenty of friends to be made, cheap hotels to be crammed into, and floors to be covered with personal belongings in various states of decay, creating a vibe in which more friendships are cemented as the shows go on. As for the state of the times in 1986, the U.S. was in the midst of peak Reagan policies, with Just Say No and a general tightening of what many deadheads would call civil liberties. The noose was tightening, but not in the cozy confines of a Grateful Dead show, no matter how beaten the path may have been. Those seeking freedom could still find it here. On TV, it was all Moonlighting and Miami Vice, Family Ties and The Cosby Show, with wholesome, unforgettable characters, the epitome of current values. The yuppie wagon was still in full swing, and the high times continued unabated. Get in while the getting's good, because the bubble is about to burst in a year. We sort of attacked Libya, and we are selling arms to Iran to help our friends in Central America. Nothing to see here. In fact, things were pastel and shiny, living in these dreams by heart as we trudged through each and every manic Monday under the watchful eye of Halley's Comet streaking overhead, a perfect storm for getting away from it all on the spring 1986 tour. Jerry, however, was in a state of decay, prompting your mom to exclaim, "He's younger than your father." But she was right. We would find out how right a couple of months later. Regardless, these six shows blessed us with some fine moments, including one in particular that may have been the final pre-coma defining moment. Yes, we are talking about the Box of Rain. The East Coast was treated to spectacular bustouts and razor-sharp playing that would carry over to the West Coast, where arguably better shows were held. But better is subjective. There are a few legendary venues on the East Coast, and you'd be hard-pressed to find many more legendary than the Hampton Coliseum. The mothership has its own pedigree and history, and these shows were no exception. As for the Philadelphia Spectrum, it's one of the most beloved arenas on the East Coast. Put these two factors together, and we'd like to think we chose a great time to see the Grateful Dead. Musical analysis. The tunes. If you include both drums and space, we have 92 songs across six shows with only 12 repeats for a 13% repeat rate, which is incredible. We also got debut versions of Visions of Joanna, Roadrunner, and Desolation Row, not to mention the Box of Rain breakout and the final Lost Sailor ever. Aside from Drums in Space, no song was played more than twice. Yet another reason some prefer shows later in the Grateful Dead's career. Three of the 9 songs that were played twice will appear on the upcoming In the Dark album, released the following year. Both Touch of Grey and Throwing Stones were hits, so we feel they merited being played again. And you can say what you want about these shows, but the lack of repeats is what really sets this run apart from others. And of course, the razor's edge, on which both the fans and the band walked throughout. Jerry's voice was fried at times, but he did his best to make up for it with inspired, soul-wrenching playing. But of course, Bob was there to take most of the heat and inject life into the music, along with Brent, whose high energy kept us afloat during times of self-doubt. Let's talk about length. If it's long, exploratory jams you're after, look elsewhere. The Dead in 86 are concise and powerful. A 15-minute plus playing in the band leads the way, but other than that, double-digit length songs are rare. The 2 new Dylan covers hit it, in fact. Desolation Row is longer than Philly's Morning Dew out of space. Birdsong, He's Gone, Let It Grow, Shakedown Street, and Terrapin Station all clock in at 11 minutes and some change. But that's it. The shows. With 3 shows at each venue, it should be easy to split them into 2 nice halves. Let's do it. Hampton Coliseum, first night, the 19th of March. Notable for the incredible Visions of Joanna, which should have gained more notoriety than it did. Too bad Jerry didn't play it more. The second set features the Lone China Rider combo and the only playing among the 6 shows. The playing is one of the highlights of all 6 shows and deserves a second listen. It was a good warm-up for the spring tour. Night 2, the 20th. Night 2 features the weakest first set of the entire run, saved by the Box of Rain. There is a hint of coasting on its coattails throughout the show, but somehow it doesn't seem to cause any problems. It is a breakout that many people still talk about years later. There are some good moments during Estimated as well. Night 3, the 21st. If you want to score at home, this is the best show of the run, notable for the supplication elements interwoven throughout. The transition into Let It Grow was a train wreck. Still, the second set is the highlight of the run, with Slinky playing and a return of playing from night 1. The Hampton run is capped by a Sweet Baby Blue, the 3rd Dylan cover in 3 nights. On to the Spectrum in Philadelphia. Night 1, the 23rd. This is the show of the tour, as evidenced by the highly unusual Gimme Some Love and Deal to open. The hand jive follows, keeping the crowd guessing all the way into a tasty might as well to cap off a rip-roaring time in Philly. The Palm Sunday show doesn't rest, serving up another enticing Philly shakedown into Samson, He's Gone, Spoonful, before drums, and that ultra-rare Jerry gem, Comes a Time, out of space. You've got to check this one out. Night 2, the 24th. You're bound to have a sophomore slump at some point, but for many, this show isn't it. The second Box of Rain brings down the house in the first set, while the second set features the last ever Lost Sailor, marking the end of the Sailor Saint era. And Jerry makes a statement with a solitary Morning Dew out of space, and we ain't even mad. Emotionally drained, the midnight hour closes it out. Night 3, the 25th. Here's where the band begins to show signs of wear and tear. Or is that a reflection of our own state? The first set is nothing to write home about, so when the Scarlet begins, we think all is well. It is, until the fire is nixed for a touch of gray. The quest for fire is left unfulfilled, leaving a hole that looks like rain cannot fill. Bob offers an olive branch before the broke-down encore, but it isn't enough. Hampton versus the Spectrum, we won't even go there. The thing is, they are both legendary venues that deserve your time. Picking one over the other would be like picking a favorite child, and we aren't that kind of parent. The Grateful Dead did their job, ushering in the spring on the East Coast so the winds might carry good fortune toward the massive population that lives there. And whether you attended these shows or not, you may have had a chance to sample some of that fine magic conjured in late March 1986. So perhaps that's it. In like a lion and out like a lamb, we rest, folding our legs beneath us to sleep a dreamless sleep, content with what we have achieved during this time. And we hope you felt some of this too. That does it for this week. However, next week, stay tuned because this space is about to get hot, really hot. We'll stay on the East Coast. What else is new? Next time is the big time in the Big Apple. How big? Here's a hint. These shows occurred a month after two absolute legends, Kate Smith and Roger Doucet, sang the respective national anthems of their countries. Three-peat denied, a four-peat had begun. See you next tour, next week on Grateful Shows.